CSI in the World, I'm John Batchelor. It's a great pleasure to welcome Tyler Rogaway, who keeps the war zone at the drive with his team, looking at the hardware and software of modern combat. We begin, however, with a story from the 20th century of an overworked, hardworking bomber, not the B-52, no. This is the B-1, and as of now, I learned from Tyler's site, the war zone at the drive, the B-1 fleet is on the ground. Tyler, a very good evening to you. Hard-working vehicles, aircraft, hard-working teams, but they've been grounded. Are they coming back? Good evening to you, Tyler.
Hey, John. Great to be with you. Yeah, the B-1B fleet has pretty much had the wings flown off of it during the global war on terror. And there's 62 of these. There's not hundreds. And they've pulled them off the front lines to recap them, to put them through a process of revitalization, so that way they can reach it another decade or so to be replaced by the new B-21 stealth bomber. And what we're seeing with this latest grounding is that even with TLC and a lower operations tempo, the aircraft are still suffering from systemic issues. In this case, it was literally like a fuel filter housing that blew out. And so you can imagine you're flying in a bomber with, a couple hundred thousand pounds of fuel on it, and all of a sudden that fuel just comes pouring out of it in midair. Once it landed, thankfully nobody was hurt when this happened. They inspected other aircraft, and they realized it was a systemic issue. So now they've grounded the entire fleet. They're reviewing them, looking at them, to hopefully make a fix to get them back in the air as soon as possible. And also keep in mind, this is the same aircraft that, as part of the new plan, is being cut from 62 airframes to 45 airframes. They're doing that so that way they can put more money and more time into the best aircraft and then also use the parts from the old ones that they're retiring. So we're also seeing a shrinking of the fleet, too, even though the idea is to hopefully get more out of these aircraft in the future.
As I recall, the B-1 was intimately involved in the fight against ISIS, and it would fly these incredibly long missions out of air bases, I believe, in the U.S., round trip, and using sophisticated weapons targeting over Iraq and Syria would strike ISIS. Do I recall correctly? Was it the B-1 involved in the fight?
Yeah, you're totally right, and they did it via Afghanistan. They did it in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria. And what changed that aircraft was putting on a fighter jet's targeting pod, which has electro-optical infrared cameras, very powerful optics, as well as a laser designator. And that what that turned that aircraft into is this arsenal ship that can loiter at, 15, 25,000 feet over the battlefield and just drop, munitions on demand down below. So it was an extremely effective tool for close air support, even though it was never designed for that. I mean, it was designed as a strategic bomber originally that also had, like, the B-52 conventional capability. Now it's all from the mid-90s on, it was only a conventional bomber. It does not carry nuclear weapons. But, yeah, it was able to fly those very long, persistent sorties. But in doing so, they put a ton of hours on these aircraft, and there's not a lot of them. And now we have to make them last over another decade, and that's becoming more and more challenging.
The Strategic Air Command, the commander, Admiral Charles A. Richard, looking at the Strategic Air Command and the possibility that intercontinental ballistic missiles, the hardened sites of the triad, will be either cut back or eliminated, putting pressure on the bomber fleet? What part of the bomber fleet? The B-52s? Is that it, Tyler?
Right. So that would be the B-52s, some of them. A portion of them are nuclear capable. And then the B-2 Spirit are our nuclear bombers. And the idea behind this, or the reaction behind this, is that the bill to recapitalize our ICBM fleet and the fields that support them in the mid, out there in North Dakota and Wyoming, et cetera, is hundreds of billions of dollars to get new missiles to go into those silos so that they can last for another 60 years. The Minuteman is like, it's in the from the 70s, the Minuteman III. So it's been updated, but the idea is now it needs to be replaced. And a lot of proponents are saying that we should get rid of it. It's a nuclear sponge, quote-unquote, that is there to take a massive hit. It also does have some early launch capabilities that are some would say are critical on the other side. So there's a debate now about whether to buy new missiles, which there's a program to do so, or upgrade, try to upgrade the Minuteman to get another 10, 20 years out of it, or to eliminate those, the whole leg of the deterrent altogether. And in response, this general said, hey, if you were to do that, we would want our bombers at the very least to go on alert duty. And we haven't had that since, you know, the 1990s, early 90s. So that is a huge commitment. People think it's just parking planes and putting guys in an area where they can run out to them and fly. It puts a tremendous tax on any fleet of aircraft doing something like that. And so we're not sure really exactly how, if the ICBM fields do end up being basically, you know, canceled and that's it, we don't have that side of the deterrent. We really don't know if we're talking about, you know, a 10 bombers on alert or 30 or even bombers on airborne alert at this time. But that's what the indication was, of some sort of alert as a reaction to this.
And this would mean that it would resemble the very famous movies Failsafe, that, or Jimmy Stewart's Strategic Air Command. They'd be flying mission, round trip missions all the time for their readiness, and a third of them would be in the air, that sort of thing.
Right. That was the Chrome Dome operation, where they, you know, had the airborne alert, and that caused all those tankers to be up there too, up in the northern latitudes. I don't believe that's what this means. I think that there would be some missions that would be flown in that way. But even just keeping them on the alert stand and having them ready to fly in 10 minutes and get off the ground before a strike can take them out, once again, that's a massive, costly toll on a fleet that's already quite old and aging. I mean, the B-52s are very old. And, you know, they're in decent shape, but, you know, the B-2 is a very finicky, expensive platform. There's only 20 of them. It would be a big change to how the entire bomber enterprise has been operating for decades. And we got to remember, the bombers are being used every day for super long-range missions to, you know, all over the world to counter our peer, just to even signal to our peer state adversaries that we're here and that we're, you know, we have the ability to strike them, you know, via the air over long distances. So it's already stressed. You know, the B-1s, they're not nuclear capable, but they're grounded right now because they're old and tired. So all of a sudden layering this mission on would be a big difference. The one thing I do have to say is it would make a great case to buy, you know, many more B-21 next generation bombers, because we would probably need that capability to fulfill this requirement.
And Tyler, does this match with what's going on in Russia and China? Are they depending upon their bomber fleet, or are they maintaining triads? Do we know?
Russia, you know, is very active with its bomber fleet. They're really cruise missile delivery platforms, nuclear cruise missile delivery platforms. But nonetheless, yeah, they have their triad. China is increasingly becoming a triad power. Their bombers now, there is intel reports that have been declassified that say on the U.S. side that their bombers have nuclear capability. That wasn't really something that's new, that we're finding out. But it all comes down to dollars and cents. And when you talk about hundreds of billions of dollars being invested into something like the ballistic missile fleet, you know, there's only so many dollars to go around. So is there other priorities? Can we invest more in the airborne side into our submarines, which are really a second strike capability that's, you know, much different than just having ICBMs on land? We'll see how it plays out. I don't see the ICBM force being eliminated. I don't. That'd be a huge change, regardless of what my own opinion is. I don't see that happening. But we could see an extension of Minuteman III and maybe a reduction of overall missiles, as opposed to a whole new system being installed for $200 or so billion.
Our colleague Anatoly Zak keeps the website RussianSpaceWeb.com, and in it I learned from Tyler's site, The War Zone at the Drive, that there was a weapon system in the depths of the Cold War by the Soviets that was meant to be an anti-satellite or anti-satellite killer. It was meant to be positioned in space and fired from what? They were going to fire it from a platform or from a space station? How were they going to use it?
Yeah, it's from their – they had a large initiative to build military space stations, multiple space stations. We did too. This isn't just a Russian thing. And part of that was they looked at ways that they could defend those platforms in orbit. And they, for instance, Russia was the first to ever fire a gun in space, a traditional projectile shooting gun. And that was part of this program. That was actually the first Shield program that they looked at. They actually tested. This was the second iteration of that. And it's this bizarre looking, I mean, it looks just like a prop out of Alien or, you know, some sci-fi movie. One of the weirdest weapons I've ever seen. We actually can't understand exactly how it was supposed to work, but it's basically a thing that is a round halo around it of grenade-like charges that fire out and explode in a would be a large fire, basically a fireworks display. But instead of fireworks, this would be shrapnel flying through the orbit, basically. And what it was meant to do is if America took a shot at one of these satellite platforms, one of these platforms, these space stations, it would then be launched to intercept it and destroy it. And so this was very much part of the, you know, the Reagan era buildup of Star Wars and Russia's reaction to that. And what's interesting about it is, I mean, this is history, right? And it's just something we can kind of look at and think, wow, whoa, gee, that's odd. But today we're now in a place that is, you know, where these anti-satellite capabilities are becoming very numerous and are in orbit. And the next major battlefield, or maybe where the wars will start, is going to be in space. So even looking back, you realize Russia has an amazing lineage, and a lot of research and development has already been done during the Cold War on how to defend space platforms. And that has gotten to be – some of those concepts have become much easier to apply with modern technology. So this is just one of those things we can look back and say, hey, that's interesting history, but maybe there's actually applications now that Russia could put this.
Tyler Rogaway. He keeps the war zone at the drive with his team, hardware and software of modern combat, and other approaches to transportation. We're going to turn to drones, robots, on the battlefield, the 21st century. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.